You're listening to the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse at bellydancegeek.com. Welcome, everybody. This is Nadira Jamal, and welcome to episode 46 of the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse. This episode is being sponsored by Treasure Marshall, who is the creator of Treasure's Skirtwork for Fusion Belly Dance, a great DVD. And you should be sure to check out her new free class, which is called Smooth Costume Quick Changes at the Belly Dance Business Academy at bellydancebusinessacademy.teachable.com/P, that's P as in Paul, the letter, /tips-from-treasure. And if you're having trouble writing that down, don't worry, there's a link directly from the episode page. The Clubhouse is a place where dancers can get together and geek out on all of those things that are hard to get in classes and on DVDs. If you want help with the what, so things like moves and combos and choreographies, it's really easy to find resources. But if you want help with the why and the how, things like musicality, composition, culture, business, all of that can be trickier to find. So every month I interview a different guest expert on a different geeky topic, and we always have time for question and answer so you can geek out too. So if you think that knowledge and creativity go together like chocolate and peanut butter, you are in the right place. My guest tonight is Elizabeth Joy. She hails from Providence, Rhode Island, not too far from where I am right now, about an hour away, and she's been studying belly dance since 2007. Her format, Improv Roulette, is a multidisciplinary collaborative performance experiment, which was founded by Elizabeth in 2012. Since then, it's grown from 6 participants to a national community with 4 official chapters across the United States. Improv Roulette aims to nurture community, collaboration, and creative spontaneity between performance artists across all genres, styles, and skill levels. You can check it out at improvroulette.com. So welcome, Elizabeth.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to have you. So today, Elizabeth is going to talk about the Improv Roulette concept and more specifically how dancers can benefit from spontaneous creation and collaboration. So to get us started, Elizabeth, can you tell us about how you got started in belly dance? Like, what's your dancing origin story?
Sure. Okay. So my beginning introduction to it is due to the fact that my mother's Lebanese. So I grew up with the music and the food. She did study belly dance a little bit in the 70s, but she didn't really perform. It was more just for personal study. And she used to teach basic moves when I was a kid, and we'd kind of dance around the kitchen table. So I always wanted to take a class, but I never formally began my study in 2007. And I just really just kind of Googled classes in my area in Providence. And I just moved to the Providence area. And found a class and was really hooked. I've always appreciated the music. And additionally, my father's a jazz musician and a music instructor. So I've always appreciated music. And I loved being a part of this dance and I loved studying it. And I've been studying it ever since. I primarily study with Arel in Massachusetts. But I take workshops.
She was my classmate way back when, and she is awesome. So if anybody's ever passing through like the greater Boston area, check her out.
Absolutely. Absolutely check her out.
Bet I cut you off.
No. I try to take workshops whenever I can, and I'm happy to study with anyone.
Awesome. And can you tell us the story behind Improv Roulette? How did you come up with this and get it started?
Sure. So the germ of the idea began in 2012, and at the time I was dating a poi spinner and a Middle Eastern drummer, and we would often just collaborate together casually, just improv together and play around, and on occasion we would perform together, but for the most part we were just, you know, in the living room playing around. And it was so fun. It was such a process of discovery. We would learn things about each other. It was such a great communication between the two of us. And we realized we had so many friends from so many different performance genres, so singers, dancers, acrobats. I thought it'd be really fun to get everyone together and just see what happens. So that fall, I ended up renting out a dance studio. Well, actually, it was a yoga studio, and I invited everyone, so everyone I know, and only 6 people showed up, but we had so much fun. I think I laughed until I was crying. It was complete ridiculousness, and it was so enjoyable. I think that time we had 3 different types of dancers and a hooper, and then the poi artist and an improv actor. And when it was over, we all decided we really wanted to do it again. So from there, I decided I was going to do this at least once every quarter, and I've been renting out a studio space and making it happen ever since.
Awesome. So can you tell us more about what Improv Roulette is and how it works?
Sure. So as you mentioned in your intro, it's a multidisciplinary collaborative performance experiment, which is a mouthful, I know, but I think it kind of really sums up what we're trying to do with this. So multidisciplinary, it's people from any performance genre, any skill level. So you could be a beginner, you could be a professional performer, any age group, any inspiration, anything. It's very casual. So no one wears costumes. You can wear whatever you'd wear to your normal practice. And there's no prior preparation time. So people show up, and then I kind of facilitate these situations that they're in, and they don't have time to communicate ahead of time what they're going to do. Just whatever comes out, comes out. And I purposefully make sure that's a safe environment and not a formal performance space. So I like to say, no spectators, only victims. So if you show up, you have to participate.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. So I was going to ask you, how does the format work? You know, what's the structure of a session?
Okay. So it's different every time. So I have a format. Basically what I do is we start out all together. We do a warm-up together, keeping in mind that all of the performers might have different warm-up needs because they're coming from different movement vocabularies. After that, we all do a piece together, which is total chaos, but it really breaks the ice. Everyone feels comfortable. Right. And from there, we move on to a round of duets. And the way that it works is I basically just pull the names of two participants. They could be two people who have never worked together before or have never even met before. And they're put in a situation where now they're going to collaborate on the spot. And it's very interesting to see how they interact and what they make without prior communication about what they're going to do. So there's often a prop element. It's not mandatory. And it could be a traditional prop, let's say in the genre of belly dance. Could be a veil, could be a cane, or it could be a very untraditional prop, like a pogo stick. I think we've used a traffic cone before, or a cardboard box. So really anything. And the people approaching that, maybe they have studied, let's say someone studied Turkish dance for 25 years. When they get up there and they're put in a situation, that's not necessarily what's going to come out. There's no restriction on their movement. So it's just an opportunity to explore.
And how do you find the prompts that lead to each duet?
So they're situational prompts. So they could be a character or a texture, like crispy, or a focus on a body part, like eyebrows or fingertips, or a location or a color. It doesn't matter. They're really very broad, or even a phrase. So some of them would be, you know, situational, like some of them are silly, like running from zombies. So they're really all over the place, and people don't have the opportunity to talk about what they're going to do ahead of time. They just jump in. So one person might interpret it one way, and then another person might take it in another direction. So it's very interesting to see how it develops.
And what's the experience like for participants? You know, what have they said about what that's like for them?
So it's always different every time. So you really don't know what you're going to get into. It's only as good as the enthusiasm of the participants. So if they're willing to let go and experiment, it's going to be a much more rewarding experience, right? And you can see how people kind of are nervous at first if they've not been there, and then they really loosen up as it goes on. It's a really good community feeling because everyone's really rooting for you to succeed, and it's because everyone's in the same situation, so everybody wants to succeed. And it's really the more you're willing to risk and put yourself out there, I think the greater the reward is.
All right. Well, you know, let's move on a little bit and, you know, let's talk about some of the concepts that went
Sure.
into this idea. And, you know, one of the big things that came up while you and I were talking, you know, just over email about what we might like to cover is the idea of play. So can you tell me, how do you see the role of play in the creative process?
Oh, I think it's vital. I think that if we give ourselves the opportunity to play and experiment and to create for the sake of creating, we're not overthinking what we're doing. I don't know about you, but I'm an overthinker. I get too much in my brain and I try to anticipate the end result. And in doing this exercise or in playing, you can get out of your brain and more into your body. It's more reactive because you have to react to the situation that you're put in. You don't have an opportunity to prepare. And because of that, there's not so much pressure to perform. You're not putting a finished piece on the stage. You're just seeing what happens. And I think in that way, you're tapping into other creative spaces. So a few years ago, I took a workshop with Sarah Beyer, who's a choreographer out of California. And I was actually taking a choreography class with her, but she said this really great quote, and I'm just going to paraphrase it. But she's talking about how when people sit down to choreograph or stand up to choreograph, they don't play enough before, and then they don't edit enough after, which I thought was a really interesting thing to say. They just try to create the choreography from start to finish without editing and rearranging. And I thought that was so interesting, and I really focused more on the first part. If we don't give ourselves the opportunity to experiment, if we're thinking too much about what our end goal is, we're missing out on the opportunity for so many interesting other things.
And, you know, what are some of the, you know, things that we lose by allowing overthinking to come to creep into our dance?
I think that we lose the opportunity to discover something new, to discover new vocabulary. And if we take the opportunity to take a risk and try something new and play, we maybe have renewed inspirations or fresh perspectives. And I was talking to Maheen from Phoenix, from She's Got Hips. And we Skype once a month, and we were talking about this great article that we read about creating things that are unrelated to your body of work. So if you're a painter, if you take the opportunity to set aside some time to just write something, or if you are a writer and you take the opportunity to maybe learn how to play music, it gives you the opportunity to look at your environment differently. So maybe the way you interpret a subject in a painting would be different when you describe it in words. And that might lead to new concepts, to new work even, or a fresh way of looking at things. And if you don't take the opportunity to experiment, you miss out on all that new input.
It also sounds to me like we just plain will enjoy our dancing more when we're not in that editing while creating space.
That's very true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we dance is because it's an enjoyable activity. If we're thinking too much about the end product, we miss out on that joy.
So, you know, given how important play is, why do you think so few of us, you know, really make time for that in our dance lives?
I think a lot of it is because we have this pressure. You know, if we're studying dance seriously, we have set this end goal. Even if we're studying it casually, we set this end goal for ourselves, and we're treating our study in a linear line. First we learn this, then we learn this, then we learn this. And I think there's a fear to take risks off of that, and it is risky to put yourself in a situation where you don't know what's going to happen, or you might present something and you feel a little silly. And to give ourselves the opportunity to do that is very valuable.
Now, you've brought up risks several times. You know, what do you see as the value in taking risks for dancers in particular?
I think that when you put yourself out there, you learn more about what you didn't know you already knew. So when you don't have that, when you're not immediately picking out from a basket of vocabulary, you just see what comes out of your body. To take a risk is the ability to give that reward.
And what are some ways that we can bring more play into our personal practice?
Okay, so for personal practice, you could just set something up like you could do like a Mad Libs improv. So you could set your entire iTunes playlist on shuffle. Maybe don't skip a song and just see whatever comes up. And maybe dance to a minimum of 3 songs. And for one, you can pick a shape. And for the next one, maybe you could pick a literary character. And for the next one, you could pick an element on the periodic table. And just don't overthink it. And maybe don't even think about it at all and just see what happens. And then after you do this, you could record your feelings and your ideas or your inspirations. And I guarantee you'll feel something after that. And the next day, maybe do it again and pick a different texture or a color or a body part and see what happens and record your feelings or your ideas or your inspirations from there.
Cool. And, you know, if we want to bring play into classes as teachers or into our performances or into the troops that we dance with, are there any ways that we can do that too?
So maybe you could set up a similar activity like that with students. So you could set up a situation where you pick a body part and you dance the entire song. Everyone in the class dances the entire song focusing on that body part. And maybe you could even go through a choreography you already have, but reinterpret it focusing only on that body part. Or you could set up rules where you have to dance a song and instead of just focusing on that body part, you can only use that body part. So I've had improv roulette before. I've done a piece where I sat down and I only used from my waist down. Or I've seen other people do a piece where they're only focusing on their elbows and how they can make shapes with their elbows or how they can take up space with their elbows. Or you could pick a shape and everyone in the class could exhaust every possible option for using that shape. So let's say square. So the obvious options would be, you know, you could do squares with your chest. You could do isolations with your hips. You could move that in a horizontal way or a vertical way. Or you could make boxes with your hands. But then after people stop thinking of the obvious things, then things might get a little weird, right? So they could think to go big. And they could use their whole body. And they could travel across the whole room trying to make squares and use the floor to make the squares. Or they could go really small and they could think about making a square with their nose and just moving their nose. And I think in doing those activities and thinking past the obvious movements, it might be a reminder to use your space more creatively in a finished piece. Or it might be a reminder to focus on your facial expressions.
That sounds really fun.
It is fun.
All right. Now, you know, it feels like one of the, you know, kind of, I don't want to say objection because that's not the right word, but one of like the fears that people might have about incorporating play into their dance is that, you know, so often we're so afraid of doing it wrong, especially because
yeah.
we do feel a responsibility to, you know, unless specifically your infusion, we feel a responsibility to have a certain level of cultural accurateness
yeah.
in what we're doing. How do you see us finding, you know, the happy balance where we can incorporate play but still be responsible performers?
That's a great question. I think that in a lot of these activities, they're not necessarily meant to go directly onto the stage. But I think in experimenting and in playing, we can remind ourselves of using the space or using our face or in these activities, practice the way that we're interacting with our audience. Or in doing these, it's giving us the opportunity to figure out what we would do if something goes wrong in a performance, right? So if there is a costume mishap or a prop mishap, it's a good way of gauging your reaction and how you're going to take that opportunity and kind of shift focus and have the best outcome.
And, you know, one thing that keeps coming to mind is, you know, way back in the day, I used to do improv comedy. And one of the big things that was the very first test at my first audition before I even took any classes. I joined a group before I took any classes. It was kind of backwards. It was in college, right? And so the very first thing at the first audition was an exercise where you had to say yes and then run with whatever the person gave you.
Yes.
Instead of saying, no, that's not a good idea, let's do something else. And the whole point was to train yourself to accept whatever idea you have and run with it and keep it going. And that's been a big piece that's made me more comfortable with improv, is because often, you know, when we're improvising and ideas are coming, we spend time saying, no, not that one, yes, this one, no, not that one, yes, this one. And that cuts us off from the music and the audience and our experience. And it also makes us late, right? Even if you say yes to a good idea, by the time you've judged it, it's too late to do it.
Yes.
And so, you know, everything that I am hearing in all of these things that you're saying, you know, is I'm just picturing people saying, yes, 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 let's do this square, let's do this square, let's see where it goes. And when I see dancers doing that in performance, it's so much more embodied and connected.
And exciting, because it's something interesting and new. It's not the most immediate expected thing.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, I'd like to move on to, you know, this idea of collaboration. I know that that was really coming from the seeds of the idea. So can you tell us why collaboration is so important to Improv Roulette?
Sure. So collaboration is really the backbone of Improv Roulette. If you do that practice and exercise we were talking about earlier, you're definitely going to learn something about yourself and your own vocabulary. But I think in watching others, especially watching other genres of performers, you're going to learn something even more. You're also going to get the energy of the audience without having to put that formal piece on stage. So there are people there watching you, observing you, reacting to what you're doing, without the expectation that you're presenting this traditional piece within the specific context. And there's energy in that feedback, and what you're going to put out is going to kind of adjust to how they're reacting and responding. I think it's so interesting because if you're, let's say you're watching a hula hooper. Well, that hula hooper, let's say they've trained as a hula hooper for many years. They kind of know what to do with a hula hoop. But if you then pick up that hula hoop, let's say you've never picked one up before, you're going to approach it in a completely different way. And that's going to give that hooper, who's maybe studied it for 10 years, the opportunity to learn something new about the prop that they've been using for years. I also think this idea of collaboration is a really interesting way to boost communication between two performers that have never met before or who have never talked before. So let's say they pull some sort of prompt and it is, gosh, I don't know. The prompt is tightrope. Then the way that they interpret that without talking about it first, it can be so interesting. I saw three women do it once at Improv Roulette years ago, and the way that they interpreted it was not in a pantomime way, and it wasn't literal, but they did their entire piece on one plane, and they never moved off of that plane. It was so cool.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, it really was exciting.
Nice. Now, you know, one thing that you mentioned before that I want to kind of pick up on is, you know, you mentioned practicing and not practicing, but experiencing, engaging with the audience's energy and adapting to what they need and how they're responding. And I feel like that's such an important skill when you are in that formal performance setting. You know, sometimes people get nervous and close the audience out or get stuck in the, like, I call it the Labrador puppy. Because one of my dance friends used to describe it like that. I'm like a Labrador puppy. I just have to like panda all over everybody. And so, and often that's a way of pushing people away, even though it seems really friendly. And so it feels like that would be such a great way to cultivate that, besides the fact that it just sounds really fun and satisfying. I hate to keep taking it back to, like, you know, the, what's the word I want? The, Man, I can't find the right word. Like the what's in it for me kind of
Yeah.
thing, you know, like you
Yeah.
know, this is the instrumental thing, right? Well, this is going to be better, make me a better performer because it sounds like a lot of the benefit is just in doing it and enjoying it anyway. But like, you know, if anybody's just like not too sure about this concept, I'm just like thinking, wow, that would make you a better dancer because that would make you a better dancer because.
Right, and I think if you only have an opportunity to dance with live bands once in a while, well, this is setting up a situation where you don't know what's going to happen. So it's similar to maybe a live music situation, or if there's like we were talking about before, if there's maybe you get to a venue and the layout's not what you expected. Well, if you have a prior experience of practicing adapting to the situation, it's going to make you a little bit more adaptable in that moment, or any number of reasons why it's good to practice reacting and relying on what you already know, but tapping into the resources that you weren't sure you had, and you know, falling back on your experience.
All right. Now you've touched on this a little bit already, but is there anything else that you'd like to talk about what we have to gain by collaborating with artists from other genres in particular?
So I think in watching other performers, you learn something about yourself, and you learn something about maybe the way that they move that might be different than the way that they move, or a creative way that they interpret something. I think it gives you the opportunity to see things that you would see in one context in a completely different light.
And, you know, how can just an aspect of community be important to artists as well?
That's a good question. I think that in building a creative community, you're able to inspire each other, and you're aware of what other people are making. So it really opens up new opportunities. For example, I think sometimes the belly dance community is it's a little bit hard for us to reach out audiences outside of the community. And I think if we reach out and communicate to other creative voices, it will bring other people in and we can really learn from each other. It's also an opportunity to get to know someone and maybe collaborate in the future. So if you are introduced to a singer, maybe there's an opportunity to collaborate in the future, or a drummer. This is an opportunity to work together and go out and make something new.
Cool. That has me thinking a little bit about, you know, when I was in college for PE credit, I took a choreography class with a pretty famous modern
Oh.
dance choreographer. And she was always a little bit, I don't want to say bitter, that's not the right word. She was always miffed
Oh.
they didn't actually do it as a proper class with credit. She was like, I can make them write papers and watch videos and create work. It's going to be great. And they would only give her a PE class. But it was great for me because I could show up, you know, 3 times a week and just do my thing. And that alone has probably had a bigger influence on my dance than anything else. And it's not that I ever got very good at modern dance or ever really incorporate any moves that I learned in that, but her way of thinking about movement and composition really spoke to me, and it just colored how I see all the belly dance stuff. And it seems like you don't have to be in college in a formal class to get that. You can get that by interacting with other people who just have different ways of talking about this stuff.
Exactly. A different way of seeing it, and a new way to kickstart an idea that could become a new choreography or new collaboration, or a new way of looking at how to use space, a new way of looking at a particular range of motion, or a new way of looking at how to frame your body with your arms. It's all this new input, all this new inspiration, and then you take that and reinterpret it with your own movement vocabulary, and something new happens.
And if somebody wants to, you know, join a creative community or create one or nurture one, how can they do that?
Okay, I think number one, you have to not be afraid to take creative risks. I think you have to make sure that you put yourself in the same position that you're asking others to be in. So make sure that you're also participating. And I think show up. So show up to other performance genres. Introduce yourself. Show up to other dance classes that are in a different genre. Go to a modern dance class. Go to a tap dance class. Go to a ukulele class. I think showing up and putting yourself out there are probably the two biggest things.
Cool. Now, you know, you recently made a really big decision about your path in the dance world. Would you like to tell us about that?
Sure. So I've decided to take a step back from performing. So I've been studying belly dance for about 10 years, pretty much consistently. I took a little break at one point, but pretty consistently. And I decided about a year ago to take a slight step back. And then this year really decided, I think I want to stop performing for a little while. At the time, about a year ago, I was co-producing a show and I had about 5 rehearsals a week. And I was in a troupe at the time and I just kind of, it was too much for me. And also, you know, working full time. And I felt like I was pulling myself in two main directions and I wanted to do the best I could possibly do at all of them. And so I took a little bit of a step back then. And now I really want to focus on learning. So I'm still studying. I'm still taking classes. I'm still going to see shows. Still taking workshops when I can. But the more I learned, the more I knew how much I didn't know. And I felt like maybe I should just focus on study instead of performing.
And, you know, it seems to me like the belly dance community sometimes forgets that performing for an audience isn't the only facet to belly dance. You know, do you agree? And if so, why do you think we have that perspective?
Oh, I definitely agree. I think that when you're a new dancer, you it's a goal to work towards, you know, your first student troupe performance or your first solo. And it's good to have goals. It's good to set goals. But I think that from then, people start to set these goals in this timeline of, oh, well, if I get to this point, you know, student showcase. If I get to this point, show on a stage. Oh, if I get to this point, they're treating it as benchmarks for validation, which is good. That's fair. But I think that there's value in the learning and that your end goal can be to learn. There's a pressure to make your performance be, to put your best work out in the performance. And it's okay to make your goal be learning. And I think also I was putting a lot of pressure on myself. And if it was a new audience that's maybe never seen belly dance, I would think to myself, okay, I have to convey everything I know and respect about this dance in this 10-minute set. And it would, I would really put a lot of pressure on myself. And I think I want to focus on learning. And also, I had said before, you know, my mother is 100% Lebanese, but I'm third generation American. And so one of the reasons why I started studying dance is to be closer to the culture. And I think there are other ways of achieving that goal and studying in other ways and not just trying to perform.
There is so much useful stuff in what you just said. and it actually had me thinking about your mom because, you know, if you step over to the Middle East and for most of the history of belly dance, most of the people who do it were not performers. And so we're mm-hmm. all, you know, all of us yeah. here are in the lineage of the professional performers who have presented this dance to audiences. But most of the people for most of the time are people like your mom who have been doing it because it's fun.
Yes.
And I feel like that's definitely a piece that's often missing in our communities is just showing up to do it is fun and not everything has to be in sparkles on a stage in front of people.
Exactly. And there's value in that as well. There's value in the learning.
Yeah. Absolutely. So you've mentioned your reasons, and wanting to step back and learn. Are there any other reasons why performers might choose to stop performing, whether it's temporarily or permanently, without quitting dancing entirely?
Yeah, I think people, your focus could shift, the amount of time that you could allot to it could shift, and that's another thing. I mean, my we're planning a wedding. We're trying to sell a house, so there's a lot of personal things that are taking up some of my time, and so my relationship with my study is changing and evolving. I'm not able to allot as much time to it as I want as I had previously, and so I think that that's a reason to kind of take a step back from performing. So life changes, time commitments, and your reason for studying could change as well, or your reason for being a part of this dance could change as well.
And what are some of the other ways that dancers can participate in belly dance and in the dance community other than dancing for an audience?
Sure, I think you can still be very much a part of the community without performing. So you can still go to see shows and still go to the student showcases, still go to restaurants and listen to the live musicians and see the dancers, still actively take classes. I still participate on a lot of forums online, read and also participate in the conversation. And I think not performing, but getting up and dancing with a group of your friends is a great way to feel like you're still part of this community. I have to tell you that I've met some of the most remarkable women because of and men because of belly dance, and I'm still, actively in touch with them, and I wouldn't trade that for anything.
And how can the rest of the dance community, support that and make sure that there's room for that?
I think a good way is for students to, and for everyone to stop measuring growth by the shows and performances, and instead measure their growth by other milestones, like maybe you really nailed that isolation that you were working on, or maybe you watch a video of yourself practicing compared to a video several years before. We don't have to measure growth just by the caliber of our performances. We can measure it in other ways, I think. And I think just take a step back and remind yourself why you're dancing. So maybe you're dancing as a way of self-expression, or to feel beautiful, or to meet new people. Maybe you're doing it for exercise. Maybe you're doing it to learn about a culture, to learn something about yourself. These are all valid reasons to be dancing. And so it doesn't necessarily have to be about that performance.
Now, one thing that I know is the norm, here in New England, but I hear is not so common elsewhere, is that, sometimes when we have, a community organized show like a Hafla or something like that, where we have a series of performances, here in our area, it's normal for there to be some open dance time, right? Where the music is playing, whether it's a live band or not, and everybody just kind of gets up and dance. And I hear in a lot of places that doesn't happen, but that seems like that would be a really crucial opportunity for, like you said, just get up with people and dance.
Yes. Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that's not a part of some Hafla's in other parts of the country, because it is very enjoyable. That's when you really feel like you're part of this community. Everyone is casually dancing. Yeah, I'm still very much doing that, and I very much love that experience.
So it sounds like that's something that event hosts in particular can do is just, even if it's just, 10 minutes halfway through the set, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
Cool. And I'm also thinking about, the role of teachers in this. And I know that, I have, I don't want to say pushed students, that's not the right word, but I've really tried to make students understand that, for all of them, performing is a possibility, regardless, I mean, not necessarily going pro in a lot of cases, just because of, the pro community is not always the professional showbiz is not the most welcoming place. And so depending on,
Right.
you know, your circumstances and your goals and yada, 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 that's not for everybody. But I've really tried to make it clear to all of my students that, you know, if you want to perform in a community capacity, that is absolutely a thing for you. And I think occasionally I've pushed people a little too hard when that wasn't a priority for them, because that part wasn't clear. So, you know, do you have any tips for teachers on how to encourage their students without giving them the message that performance is the be-all and end-all?
Well, I actually think a push is pretty valuable, because I know for myself, when I first started performing, there's no way I wouldn't have done it without a firm push. and I'm grateful for that push. I'm grateful for that encouragement. But yeah, I think if teachers remind themselves that that's not always people's end goal, and I will say that there have been some people that I've studied with who have been studying belly dance way longer than I have, and they've never intended on performing, and they never have performed. They're really just there to exercise, to be in this community of like-minded people, to learn. And I think if teachers check in and kind of evaluate what the goals are of their students, I think that will help.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, is there anything that I didn't ask you about that you'd like to talk about today?
I just want to reiterate the fact that there really is power in taking risks. You'll learn that you know more than you think you do, and you'll definitely discover something about yourself and the other people that you're taking risks with. And if anyone wants to contact me, they can definitely contact me at improvroulette@gmail.com. I'm happy to answer any questions if anyone has any questions.
Awesome. You know, and if there's one thing that people take away from this call, what would you want that to be?
Get out there and meet new people, put yourself out there and try something new.
Awesome. And if people are interested in starting their own Improv Roulette community, is contacting you the right place to start, or should they check out your website?
Sure. So they can check out Improv Roulette, improvroulette.com, or you can email me at improvroulette@gmail.com, or you can go to Facebook, and it's facebook.com/improvr.
Awesome. All right. So I'd like to open this up for questions and answers. So if you are on the phone or on Skype, you can press ** to unmute yourself. Or if you're listening on the webcast, you can type in your questions in the little chat box on the right. And to view that, you have to click on the button that looks like a little rectangular speech bubble with three dots in it. Would anybody like to start?
Me.
Awesome. Go for it.
I have been interested in this ever since I first heard about it, which I think was through Maheen. Not real sure where I first, but I just thought this was so exciting. It sounded like so much fun. And I've approached dancers in my community, and they are like, they're horrified. They're, I'm sure, very frightened. And I only have one dancer agree. I haven't even thought about trying to approach like other genres, like musicians. Or how do you convince people this would be such a blast? How do you get them to, because I don't mind talking to people, but they look at me like I'm nuts. So how do you convince people that this would be a fun thing?
Okay, that's a great question. So first, I just want you to know I have a lot of resources for you. So if you are interested in setting up a chapter in your area, please email me, because we can talk about that. I have a set format and a lot of resources. To convince people to do it, I think you have to be persistent. but once people have come once, I think that they realize that it's a very valuable experience, and they're willing to come again. Once they're there, they're going to give firsthand testimonials, and I think that that's the real value. That's really where you're going to get people in. If people go to it and say, sure, I was scared, but it was worth it, I think they're going to bring in more people. And it's really word of mouth and firsthand testimonials that are going to get more people to come back.
Gotcha. One other question. Because you're working with other genres, like actors and just outside of the dance community, Do you always play music? Is that like always a part of it?
That's a great question. So if I have live musicians, they're providing the music. If I have somebody who wants to perform with no music, that works as well. If somebody wants to use a prop to make a sound, that works as well. If somebody's singing, that's what they do as well. So no, it's not always pre-recorded music. It could be a soundscape that we create together. It could be the live musicians. It could be no sound at all. That's a great question.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. I definitely will be contacting you. Nadira, tell me how to mute myself.
You can press ** again, or if it doesn't work, I can mute you myself.
Okay. Thank you.
My pleasure. Good questions, Treasure.
So if anyone is in New England, there is an improv roulette coming up soon. So perhaps you can join us.
Awesome. Do you have the dates yet?
Yep. So it's going to be March 4th.
Nice.
It's at Arel Studio. So that's Ancient Art Studios at 590 Berkeley Street in Berkeley, Massachusetts. And it's running from 1 to 4. It costs $10 to participate just to help me cover the studio rent. And like I said before, if you show up, you have to participate. So no spectators, victims only. And I would be so honored to have you if you were nearby.
All right. So I think in that case, I'm going to make it last call for questions. Would anybody else want to ask a question or mention their favorite thing that they learned or the thing that they're most excited to try? All right, then I think we will call it a night. So thank you so much, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. And I'd also like to thank our sponsor, who we just heard from a few seconds ago, Treasure Marshall. Once again, she's the creator of Treasure Skirtwork for Fusion Belly Dance, a really great belly dance video on Fusion Skirtwork. I know because I saw it. And she's got a new free class at the Belly Dance Business Academy called Smooth Costume Quick Changes, which you can get at bellydanceteachable.com/P-as-in-Paul/tips-from-treasure. And that is totally free, but if you still need some convincing, you can also check out her appearance on the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse from a couple years ago when she talked about some different aspects of costuming. So you don't need to pre-screen or just go get the free course, but if you feel like it, go ahead and check out her her episode. And to let you know what's going on in the Belly Dance Geek world, I am thrilled to be telling everybody that I'm going to be teaching at the Austin Belly Dance Convention this year. That's coming up in June. And if you'd like to study with me and a bunch of really fantastic other teachers, that's at theabdc.com. And thank you everybody for coming. This is the end of our call, but that doesn't mean that the conversation has to end. We'll be sending out an email shortly, which will have a link to a private Facebook group for the Clubhouse. So if you want to talk more about what we've learned or maybe ask Elizabeth some more questions or discuss it amongst yourself, we'll have the opportunity to do that. And also that email will include a link to our feedback survey. This is a place where you can suggest topics or speakers or any way that I can improve the Clubhouse. I'll also send out a link to the call recording, so if you want to listen again, you can do that, as well as a link to the Improv Roulette site so you can find that more easily. Our next call is coming up in February, but I don't have absolute confirmation on the topic yet. I have my guest, but not the topic, so I'm going to wait to tell you about that for a little bit. So keep an eye on your inbox, and we'll have that to you shortly. And the last thing that I want to say is that this is the come on in kind of Clubhouse, not the no boys allowed kind. So if you know anybody who would enjoy these, you can invite them to join us at bellydancegeek.com/clubhouse. And until next time, happy dancing. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening. For more geektacular resources, check out bellydancegeek.com.